Going low indeed, and welcome back to the show. Paul Alexander with you. We are poured by Bell's Oberon Beer, powered by Bowser, and we're going to welcome back to the show. And I'm very excited when someone's willing to do this twice with me, because you know, usually it's one and done with me. Jeff Leishman checking in from Jupiter, Florida. He is a teacher of great golfers, and I just can't even imagine how much fun that must be, Jeff, that you get to see guys go challenge a situation like the Masters, and you've had pupils, you've had students go challenge Augusta, have you not?
I have, yes. I'm glad you didn't scare me away the last time. So
see, that's a relief. That's a relief. I love that.
Yes.
See, that's always the telltale test. Back for
more.
Well,
I'm an early morning. I'm an early morning person as well. So this gets my brain rocking and rolling first thing in the morning.
As far as the challenges of Augusta, is there that moment? Certainly, there's always a first time, and I'm sure, the guys that you've been teaching, the guys that you've instructed, what's it like for them that first time? I mean, I can't even imagine the emotion and the nerves and all the things that come with that.
Well, there is certainly the aura and the stories that are associated with Augusta National. And then there is the getting down to business of preparing so that it seems as much as possible like a regular event. And that's the challenge, to try to bring your skills to that place and not necessarily let the environment influence you too much so that you make it seem like a $2,000 a stage, basically, because it's there's certainly a lot of the things about it that will make it seem like the lights are brighter.
And from everything I've gathered, and I just had a gentleman on that he's heading there for his 41st Masters to cover it as a member of the media, which to me, 41 years, that's amazing. But he said, and he's been lucky enough to play it in those, you know, after the event's over, he's played a couple of Mondays. And he said, it's really wide open. I mean, when you're standing on the tee box, the rough isn't, you know, we have Oakmont up here, which you're familiar with. If you hit it into the rough at Oakmont, you may break your wrist trying to get it out. That's not the situation. What makes the Masters so challenging when it really doesn't have some of the other, you know, it doesn't have U.S. Open-like conditions? What makes it so difficult?
Well, it's about positioning. So when you are putting the ball in the right spots relative to the hole on approaches or setting up the right tee shots, I think that's why you see runs of birdies and why people will have these spells of great play and what seems like the golf course is easy. And then as soon as you're out of position, whether it's off the tee or just even in putts, suddenly it gets ridiculously hard. So that is in your mind. And I'm convinced that Augusta gets harder the more times you play it. You know, generally the belief is that, you know, it gets easier because you know there are these nuances. But I'm actually of the opposite opinion. It gets harder because you know, like, ooh, if I go there, if I'm here to this pin, now then all of a sudden it starts to look really actually quite narrow. I can use the example of the first hole. Is that the first time that I went there, I thought, well, why is the first hole so hard? Well, you can challenge the bunker on the right off the tee, and that makes the fairway essentially half as wide. But if you play short of the bunker, now you're hitting a much longer club into the green from an upslope. So there's all these little choices that you make. It's the epitome of choices and all these different ways to play it. And I think that's really why people spend a lifetime trying to figure it out.
Now, Jeff, when you had obviously an expectation of Augusta, and then once you got there and once you made that drive down Magnolia Lane, and how did it stack up to what your expectations were, and what stood out about it once you got there and finally got to experience it?
Well, certainly the manicured nature of everything, from the one of the first years that I was there, there was a thunderstorm. It was a pretty violent storm that had occurred during the night, and there were trees that were down. And I remember one of the trees on Magnolia Lane had come down, and it was, you know, it was messy. It had not fallen across the lane, but it had fallen. And then, well, in what seemed like a matter of hours, it had disappeared. Like, it was sort of like magical that it had just gone. It was like somehow they had airlifted it out of there. So that part, and then the thing that most people say is how hilly it is.
Yeah, like, the elevation.
The slopes are, yeah, the slopes are much more extreme. Like, you could probably legitimately ski down the 10th fairway.
That's that, and that is that probably as difficult a par four that you'll find at Augusta, number 10?
Yeah, number 10. And then not so much anymore because of how far people hit it, but 18, yeah, it was very difficult for the same slope. I mean, you're coming back up that same slope the other way. But 10, because you're hitting, well, you got to hook it as a right-handed golfer, basically, and then you have to hit off a downslope to a backup green that is not really suited for that. So, there's a lot of things that are uncomfortable about 10.
When you get your guys ready to attack Augusta, are there certain strategies that are in place just for Augusta, or is it just you have to bring your best game and your best mentality?
I would say the latter, because if you let the golf cart start to play you, let's just say with short game, where you start to try to adapt shots just for that place, it you don't have the level of ownership and the time to play them, and then it doesn't go well. So you really got to – and you see this from the veterans, people who have been there a number of times. They go through their shots. This is some of them. And I remember John Rahm last year talking about how much he had prepared for the tee shot on 13 and also the second shot on 8. And so he'd specifically worked on these drawing shots to deal with them. And then there was a very pivotal point in the final round where he was going to decide whether he was going to use it or not. And if you go back and happen to watch that shot in the telecast, you'll see like how gratifying or how like happy he is that it came out when he needed it. So that's an example, I think, of both of you know, the question that you asked. Like, he's been there enough to prepare for that one or two shots, where most of it, though, is he's bringing his left to right. You see that more now. People used to be thought of, if you hit the ball left to right, you just couldn't play the place as a right-handed golfer. And with Scottie Scheffler and John Rahm and other cutters of the ball, Dustin, they figured out how to bring their shots to a place that has a lot of very dominant draw shots for a right-handed golfer.
And how do you work with people? And I finally have given up. I was obsessed with working the ball. I was so fascinated that I actually was able to do that, you know, to hit a cut when I needed to, hit a draw when I needed to. But I would double-cross myself at least two or three times a round, and that would be my two or three double bogeys, which ruin a good round. How do you work with, I mean, you know, John Rahm's a predominantly left-to-right player, like you mentioned. Now, when a shot calls for a draw, calls for a hook, how do you teach that? I mean, I know it's stance and alignment and grip and everything, but how do you get someone in their head to be okay with, you know what, that's not my normal shot, but I got to hit it here?
Well, usually it is a more exaggerated feel. Tiger has historically been a really good example of that. If he's going to hit a different shape, he exaggerates the swing path. And with TrackMan now, you can measure those path numbers, and so you have a reference and then a numerical measurement of what that path is. And the reason why shaping it is less of what you see in, especially in pressure situations in golf now, people predominantly ride one shot, is that if you're introducing two different variables, like the path is changing as well as the face alignment, it's much more difficult to do. So you'll see people riding one shape because then it's really the one variable, the club face and the alignment to that path. So that would be my explanation on why John Rahm was still like in that situation. Like, okay, I'm going to deviate from my pattern to hit this shot, and I'm going to use this feel that he probably was practicing for,
oh my gosh, yeah,
well, months, yeah, before.
Sure. That's phenomenal. I got to do an event. They had the senior PGA here. I'm not sure what senior event it was, but we did a little chipping contest. You know, with Tom Lehman. And if you're familiar with Tom's game, he is the most predominant, you know, right to left player I think that's ever been on tour. I mean, he cannot make the goal. He can't make it go to the right. Like, I would just tease him and say, oh, you know what? I think you're blocked out here. And he would be on the tee box, but there'd be a tree on the left side. I'm like, you're blocked out here. We just had so much fun. But is it so much safer to just go with what your ball flight normally is?
Yes, it is. And in teaching amateur golfers who were very dominant, as a right-handed golfer, let's say left to right path, and they were playing the slice and they were obsessed by, or at least really motivated to get rid of it. but if their body wasn't moving that way, most of what I said is like, why don't you just live with this?
Yeah.
I mean, be the Tom Lehman of the ball going fairly far left to right, and you'll enjoy this a lot more, that you're not fighting it. And like a lot of my job, even with professional golfers, is figuring out whether the pattern that they want or see matches with how they move. And if that doesn't happen, then golf gets exponentially harder.
Yeah, and so, it's already hard enough, as we know.
Yeah, exactly.
Jeff, thank you so much for your time. People can find you at Jeff Leishman Golf. Is that correct? Is that I love it.
Golf.com.
And hopefully someday I'm going to come down there and visit you at the Dye Preserve, because Jupiter Hills blew my mind, but I would imagine the Dye Preserve is just as awesome.
It's a very nice place. Yeah. And I'm in the car driving there this morning. It's a beautiful sunny day down here.
Oh,
and I get to hang out and talk about golf.
Jeff, God bless you, and thank you so much for your time.
All right. Well, it was good chatting with you.
All right. Jeff Leishman. He is at the Dye Preserve in Jupiter, Florida, and what a great guest, and I'm sure an amazing teacher. All right, we got to get to a quick break here. We're going low. We are powered by Bowser. We're poured by Bell's Oberon Beer. And since I can't play golf today, at least we get to talk about it right here on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan.